This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And for the last segment, we had a question about prostate biopsies. A guy is essentially he's reluctant to get a prostate biopsy. His PSA has fluctuated. It's 6, it's 8, and back down. The doctor is concerned. There's another more precision test, which is called the...
What he wanted to do was his MRI, his prostate was soft and the MRI was negative.
Oh, the MRI was negative.
Yeah, the MRI was negative. Oh. So how does the doctor determine where to take the samples from for the biopsy?
Ooh, okay, so this is interesting because, you know, and I gotta say that I'm not a professional urologist, and there's a little bit of a dilemma here because we've got an elevated PSA, and we've got...
And his PCA3 urine test was 32,
which should
not be above 25.
Right, so we have some ambiguous signals here. We've got the PSA, which is high, but PSA could be high for a variety of reasons. It could be high with a large prostate, it could be high with prostatitis, doesn't always mean cancer. But the other test sheds some additional light on that, and it's in the range where prostate cancer is suspected, not confirmed. The only way to confirm prostate cancer is with a biopsy, of course. I was going to say get an MRI, but he got an MRI, and the MRI
and it was negative,
which is a very good sign.
Yeah.
I would say that, first of all, when you do prostate biopsies, from what I understand, they're guided biopsies. They generally have a target, like, where on the MRI were they positive, or at least they're ultrasound guided, and you can actually see irregularities in the prostate that you shoot for. But a prostate biopsy is a little bit like, do you ever play the game Battleship when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah, I love that game.
You know, where you basically, you're firing these torpedoes where you think might be, they have destroyers, battleships, and cruisers, right? So you're just firing these things at random, and you know maybe you're going to hit something. And once you hit something, then you can sort of piece together where the rest of the battleship is.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit what a prostate biopsy is like. It, to some extent, they're slicing and dicing your prostate. Not slicing literally, but they're penetrating it with a fine needle to try and hit something, and they're going to pull out cores.
Yeah.
And then a certain number of cores may be positive, which indicates the pervasiveness, how far it's spread. And also there's a grade of the changes in the cells, which speak to the aggressiveness of the prostate cancer. So nowadays what they can say is even if they find prostate cancer, under certain circumstances, they say, well, let's do active surveillance, watchful waiting. And we have several men under our care.
Yes.
Where that's a very successful strategy. Subsequent biopsies are negative. PSAs go down. They change their lifestyle. They're on a really excellent diet. They're on
some
great
really good supplements.
You know, they exercise, change their whole lives. It ends up also reducing their cardiovascular risk. They lose weight. They get healthier. The cholesterol comes down. I got to say, under these circumstances, I can't answer this question. I would get a second opinion from one of our experts, you know, who actually we're going to have him on, and I think I'm going to save this question. He's going to be on this summer. He's Dr. Aaron Katz.
Oh, great.
He's a colleague of mine. He has his own radio show, which is a popular radio show on a big station in New York, and he's been my go-to guy for these kind of situations. It's kind of like you really need... it's a judgment call by an experienced urologist. And we'd like our urologists to be conservative, but prudent, you know, not to say, oh, you know, don't worry about it, it'll be fine. You don't have sort of a Pollyanna-ish attitude towards this. But recognizing that, see, the other downside is maybe they'll find some prostate cancer. But now this guy is beset with anxiety that he's got prostate cancer.
Yeah.
And it could be a prostate cancer that could have been the prostate cancer that was going to kill him when he was 111.
Right.
You know, that is not, it's an indolent, slow-growing, non-aggressive prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
What concerns me a little bit, the elevated PSA, but the elevated PSA could be the result of a inflammation of the prostate.
So, there
are other tests now that are a little bit more precise. You know, what we need in breast cancer and in prostate cancer is we need to better tests to help us discern who needs aggressive therapy.
Yeah.
And who could be left alone.
Yeah.
Even in the presence of the finding of some abnormal cells.
Yeah. Yeah. Russell, wow. And thank you for, you know, the detailed email here. And I'm going to forward you this email so that you have it for Dr. Katz.
I'm going to put that question to Dr. Mm-hmm. Katz. And we have a couple of questions along these lines.
We do? Okay.
Where, you know, I'll save them in the mailbag for Dr. Katz.
Great.
Because what happened was, I had a question, I think it was like a few weeks ago. And so I emailed Dr. Katz,
mm-hmm.
and he said, I'd be glad to come on your radio show to talk about it. I said, well, why don't we do a whole podcast? It's like more leisurely. We could do it, a whole 45 or 50 minute expose of these kinds of issues.
Terrific.
And he's always a very articulate guest, very well-informed, experienced,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, a guy whose judgment you can trust.
Yeah. And you can find this all on Intelligent Medicine, so keep listening.
Yeah.
And you too, Russell. Best of luck to you. All right. We have an email
Let me make an announcement. Is one of the things we're going to do, and I'm just cooking this up this summer, is I'm going to do some short videos every week
mm-hmm.
that remind people of the podcasts that we're doing
mm-hmm.
So that it's a way. I mean, we have some people listen to every single podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
They're real, like these fanboys and fangirls.
Uh-huh.
They listen to but there other people may say, you know, like there's some things that don't concern me, but I want to, it's kind of like, you know, the TV guide. It's like, let me see if there's something interesting here.
Oh.
And then they can
the topics.
See this short, you know, little video summary of what I'm doing that week.
Okay.
And then they can say, hey, that's a podcast that is worth my time. You know, it's a time investment. People are busy.
Sure.
You know, 45 minutes of your time. You know, you want to make sure that's something up your alley. So
right.
That's something that I'm working on with some of our mm-hmm. Executive producers. And speaking of which, let's acknowledge that this podcast is brought to you by generous sponsors who want to strut their stuff. So let's allow one of our sponsors to share this important message with you. Here goes.
Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you, and how rare is that these days? And now back to our questions. What's next?
All right, we've got an email from Larry. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, my doctor recently demanded that I go on a statin.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried reasoning with him, citing the research, the negative aspects, but it always comes down to him getting stern, almost angry. And I can tell that he wants to say, who's the doctor here, me or you? Well, he's old school and I guess we'll be forever stuck in his ways. And without asking me what my diet consisted of, he said only, get off the cheese.
Right. Okay, so let me just say, I think that kind of authoritarian attitude in medicine is very passé.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the way I operate.
No.
I mean, look, if, frankly, I mean, if I've got someone who is smoking, you know, I'm really going to push them hard to stop smoking.
Yeah.
It's in their interest. It's pretty clear cut. However, I'm, you know, it's not going to help if I yell at them.
No.
In fact, you know, it'll just get them to dig in their heels or, you know, they'll just walk away. So I try to keep people engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And this doctor is disengaging this guy to the point where he's got to appeal to me for a second opinion.
Yeah.
You know, so you can see it's not working with the doctor.
So
the other thing about it is, I don't know this guy's circumstances. So maybe the doctor has a good reason for him to be on a statin.
Mm-hmm.
Merely high cholesterol, in my opinion, is not a good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But there may be some risk factors that this doctor is aware of that I'm, you know, would convince me that this guy needs to be on a statin.
Yeah.
So I don't know. One of my favorite things to do is render a second opinion on whether people need to do a statin. And I try to do it from a skeptical standpoint, because I'm not for statins for everybody, you know, put in the drinking water, everybody, you know, has got to take them.
But that'll be next.
Yeah, no. Just like, you know,
measles. Next to the fluoride.
Here's your measles vaccine, here's your statin, here's your blood pressure medication. But so the other thing is the recommendation to get off cheese is not evidence-based.
No, it's not. And Larry actually sent over an article from Natural News about eating cheese doesn't raise cholesterol.
That's not my favorite source.
Yeah.
That's my favorite, but they happen to be right.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. Because the cholesterol or the fat in the food is not going to raise your cholesterol. Your liver makes as much as 80% of the cholesterol
you need. Epidemiological studies do not link the consumption of high-fat dairy with heart disease. Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. That's right.
And it may be that, you know, here's this Dutch paradox, the country that is famous for making wonderful cheeses. They have a very low incidence of cardiovascular disease.
Yeah.
And it may be that the vitamin K as a fermentation byproduct in cheese. Is responsible for the protective effects of cheese. In fact, one of the top vitamin K researchers is Dutch.
Yeah.
As coincidentally.
Yeah.
Dr. Sugars.
Wow. So, Larry, it is true that eating cheese doesn't raise your cholesterol or increase your risk.
Well, you know, let me qualify that.
Yeah.
I think there may be some people, based on their metabolic individuality,
sure,
where it does.
Mm-hmm.
But I think...
And there's a such thing as eating too much cheese, which Larry confesses to doing.
Okay.
A little bit.
Is he part rodent?
Is he? No. He does say he consumes a fair amount of cheese. Larry, try to keep it at 4 ounces or less.
I think the best way to use cheese is sort of as a condiment.
Yeah, you know, as a flavor.
A little bit of a flavor enhancer.
The way you grate some Parmesan.
If you're not allergic, if you don't...
Yeah.
We do think for... I recently reviewed some of the evidence on dairy products and prostate cancer. And we generally tell our prostate cancer patients not to have dairy because it's a hormonal thing.
It's not about the cholesterol. It's not about the fat. It's about the hormones in milk.
But a big recent review said milk was associated with more aggressive prostate cancer, but cheese wasn't in that study.
Could be the lactose or...
It could be
because it's a form of sugar, number one. Or it could be there's a little less IGF in cheese, maybe to do in its processing, but how do we know?
And it'd be interesting to see if you know, somebody consumed just, you know, organic milk that was from animals where there was no hormones added, no antibiotics.
Organic and raw.
Yeah.
I haven't seen much about the raw movement lately.
Raw, they're never going to allow a study on raw milk because that's done.
I know.
Because it's in Europe, they have good regulations to keep it safe and inspected. But here it's an all or nothing thing. It's like no raw.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, probably some listeners will say, I get raw from like Farmer John down the road.
That kind of a thing. But.
Right. But as a commercial thing, it's too much liability. It's like the tort laws in this country and federal regulations won't permit, and state regulations won't permit.
That's true. Larry, eat some cheese. Yeah, maybe. Don't put it on bread. Don't eat it on pizza.
That's the other thing is cheese.
Don't put it on pasta.
Maybe why cheese kills you is because it encourages the consumption of pasta and pizza.
Maybe, yes. So, you know, be careful of that. But thank you for your email.
Because who would eat like this flat bread, like dry, desiccated thing that's like toasty bread? Forget about it, but put tomato sauce had cheese on it,
and it's
and
amazing, right?
Pepperoni pizza. It's
Oh my gosh. All right. Thank you, Larry.
I had a celebration the other day, I will confess.
Oh, what? What?
I don't
It's good to celebrate.
I'm kind of on the whole 30 paleo, so I don't even have gluten. I stopped eating gluten-free products. But the other night, we had a little celebration, and we, it was like a treat. We got those gluten-free pizza shells.
Oh.
And it was, and so I put tomato sauce and some real, very expensive buffalo mozzarella on top.
Oh, yum.
And it was really good.
I'll bet.
And I don't usually have that kind of stuff. And I survived.
And that's what celebrations are for. All right. Moving on, we have an email from Paul. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. How valuable is apolipoprotein B in predicting heart disease? That's B like boy. My most recent blood test results included this test, and I scored high.
It's a pretty potent factor.
At 105.
That's not that high.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I think the cutoff is like 90.
Okay. Okay. I just switched over to a more keto diet, and my LDL cholesterol increased. And my triglycerides decrease.
Well, that's interesting. If you look at, there's a Twitter handle, LDL Skeptic.
Yeah.
And it's Dr. Diamond, I think, who's been a guest on my show.
Mm-hmm.
And his contention is that LDL will go up on a keto diet, but that's actually a sign that LDL is being marshaled to clear cholesterol from the arterial wall.
Oh, that's
it's
interesting.
Not necessarily bad. So he's a skeptic and he's an outlier.
Yeah.
But he is really pushing back on this LDL criterion for statin administration, you know.
And I think it is critical. Yes, your LDL may go up on a keto diet. It may go up temporarily, or it may just go up and stay up, which we've seen.
Yep.
However, your particle size is going to get better.
Right, generally.
Yeah, so generally from a small, dense B to A.
Right. Let's talk about particle size. What are we talking about here?
We're talking about pattern A, large, fluffy particles, which are less atherogenic. They're less apt to be caught in the nooks and crannies of the arteries and cause obstruction. Mm-hmm. Small, dense pattern B particles is what is less desirable, more atherogenic, will tend to get caught in those crevices and possibly create a blockage. What happens when you go on a keto diet, and it takes 3 whole months before it happens, people, don't run and get this test as soon as you started a keto diet in 4 weeks
and
from now.
Maybe
3 months.
A keto adaptation phase where the LDL goes up transiently and then comes back down.
Right, right. Okay. So you have to wait 3 months, everybody.
Okay,
and
I didn't know that.
And then go look at your lipids.
Okay.
And then you will see that your triglycerides have fallen off a cliff, which it has for Paul. His triglycerides went down to 57.
That's
Do you know how great that is?
That's great.
You have literally wiped out a risk factor for heart disease.
Yeah. Because triglycerides are a potent risk factor for cardiovascular disease.
Yeah. So Paul says, I like this higher fat diet and I don't want to change unless it's necessary. I'm a 64-year-old amateur athlete with no heart issues and no drugs. Mm-hmm. Yay, and let's stay that way. Oh, and by the way, Paul says, I am betting on Dr. Hoffman to outlive Dave Asprey.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Because that's the bulletproof coffee guy.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I mean... But do I have as good a six pack as Dave Asprey? I mean, I have some definition, but that guy's
more
got...
important to outlive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The six pack can happen or not happen, but outlive is
that's
good.
That's a high accolade to say, you know, Dave Asprey, because that guy is like, he likes to appear shirtless a lot.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah,
is
I got to rock that look a little bit, you know.
Well, there you go.
I got to oil my body down. And
right, know, yeah. You know, a lot of those competitions of the bodybuilders and things, and I had a client recently, it was just about a year and a half ago, who was highly competitive, and she talked to me about how they had to dehydrate themselves.
Oh, yeah, right.
So you would look more cut and all that.
Yeah, right.
I said, no.
Yeah,
and
it's
are,
very bad, but it's for competition, you know, it's for looks. It's not for health. It's for looks.
It's not for health at all. And many have been dehydrated to the point of passing out and
so forth.
Yeah. I can't be a proponent of any of that. So I let her know the dangers of what she was doing.
Yeah.
So I had to let her know that. Anyhow, so apolipoprotein B could be a predictor. And apparently, Dr. Hoffman, this number is not that high for him, 105. Go look at the particles of your LDL. Your triglycerides have fallen down. That's no longer a risk factor.
Also, it's all part of a pattern of risk. And we tend to look at lipids, cholesterol-related things.
We look at
Lp-little-a.
Yes, that's an important one.
We look at the blood clotting factors. Mm-hmm. We look at inflammatory factors.
C-reactive protein.
Insulin resistance.
Yes.
So there are many factors that go into that complex equation.
Yeah.
So maybe you have a bad apolipoprotein B, but maybe you've got some really super protective factors going on.
Yeah.
And I suspect that, there are probably 5 or 10 additional factors that we haven't yet discovered.
Yeah.
Major factors.
Mm-hmm.
So another one that's being proposed is something called TMAO.
Yes. TMAO. I want to start with trimethyl, but I don't think that's...
Trimethyl amino oxidase.
Okay.
Trimethyl amino oxidase. See, together we have a brain. You know, it's like we couldn't figure this out on our own. That's why we do this together.
Right.
TMAO is a byproduct of choline and metabolism and mm-hmm. carnitine metabolism to some extent. But so then how would that be bad for you if people consume a lot of fish? Generally, are protected from cardiovascular disease. That fish is loaded with choline.
Yes.
That's mediated by the microbiome.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people have a microbiome that converts the choline in their diet to TMAO. That has mm-hmm. been proposed as a risk factor. It's one of those things that got a lot of attention a couple of years ago and now is sort of receding in importance.
Hmm.
And there may be other risk factors like that that we haven't even anticipated. So how do we count, for example, we have the patient we're talking about. A patient comes in the year 2000
mm-hmm.
or so, the early 2000s, and I see that she has a very high cholesterol. She's here for a second opinion on whether she needs to take a statin, because all the doctors are yelling at her, you know, like,
take
you
a statin, no!
It's crazy, your cholesterol's 320, come on, get with it. So she says, do I need it? And I said, well, you might. And then we did a
EBT heart scan.
It was zero. So I said, you have protective factors that in spite of this, not good cholesterol. And she didn't have such a great HDL. I think it was like 57 or something.
Hmm.
So just a sky high LDL, 225, 250, zero plaque. So, I see her again in 2018, last year. And I said, it's been a long time, and now your cholesterol is 340.
Mm.
Oh, my God. She goes, yeah, they're still, they practically given up on me. They keep telling me I need a statin, but I remember that zero plaque. I said, well, let's, in an abundance of caution, I don't usually do this. Let's do it again, just to make sure that this isn't creeping up on you, because it's such a high cholesterol. We did it again. It was zero.
Wow.
It was zero. So there's something, I think, ineffable about her metabolism that is safeguarding her.
Yes.
These are the kind of people we need to study. We need to say, let's have a bunch of people who have cholesterol 300, 350, who don't have any plaque. We need to study what they have, because this could actually be a path towards drug development. We could say, maybe if we can replicate whatever it is that's protecting them and give it to people who have mm-hmm. high cardiovascular risk, then we could come up with this next blockbuster drug. I'm sure somebody else has thought about this
sure.
and is trying to create a mm-hmm. startup company around this, that's the way to go in drug development.
And she probably didn't have this high cholesterol from eating too much cheese.
No, it's not. She says, no matter what I eat, I have this. No, it's like you're generating it.
Yeah. Yeah. Her liver's making it for a reason.
Some other people say, yeah, but she eats a lot of junk. No, she doesn't.
No.
Yeah.
I remember. Okay. Thank you, Paul, for that question.
Something quick.
Oh, it's a comment.
Okay. Let's take a comment.
This comes from Rosemary. Right on, Dr. Hoffman. Sick of seeing a specialist, have him look up his diagnosis and then send me on my way with the recommended drug, usually Big Pharma's latest blockbuster, never listening to a patient's questions or concerns. Big Pharma already took care of it. Keep quiet and take the drug. Next patient.
Very nice. Well, that kind of captures the spirit of intelligent medicine.
On that note.
We're not anti-drug
per se.
We're all for intelligent medicine, coming up with intelligent solutions. That's the way we were trained, is that, you know, doctors are supposed to be, and most of them fit this profile, like me. They are little scientists who were good in science, smart kids, who also have sort of a humane bent. So we said, instead of, you know, just working in a cubicle or a laboratory, we want to help mankind.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to harness our science knowledge to help mankind and womankind, you know, to be PC and balanced in our, you know, in our terminology here. And so that's what medicine's supposed to be about. But unfortunately, medicine has devolved to protocols and algorithms, and the science part and the inquiry part, we're supposed to be critical absorbers of science. You know, we read articles in journals, and we're supposed to say, well, you know, that makes sense. I'm going to apply this to my patients. Or, yeah, you know, I see the flaws in the argument. I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon with that new drug. And unfortunately, doctors are too often all in on everything that comes down the pike from the far. And then also they're sort of told, this is what you do. This, in this condition, this is what we do. These are, this is practice guidelines that we're now seeing. And, you know, if you step out of the practice guidelines, number one, you get penalized, you get ostracized, you get professionally disciplined, you could get sued. You know, there's so many pressures on doctors to conform. And, you know, that's what medicine has become. It's no longer the art of medicine. It's sort of like it's like the you know, it's a cookie cutter
medicine.
That's exactly the word I was looking for.
Wow.
All right, so intelligent medicine, that's what the show is called. And you can email your question to radioprogram@AOL.com. Have yourselves a great week. Thank you, Layla, for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As we age, forestalling and even reversing bone loss becomes more and more important. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Bone Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to ensure your skeletal health. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. In addition to the Bone Health Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for my supplement starter kit, Heart Health Protocol, and much more. These new protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle, and for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.